It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, your host. And if you are listening and tuning in right now, if you have a financial question at any point in the hour or for the rest of your life, you can call 1-888-6-ADVICE or email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But right now, you can call us at 651-461-9226. You can call us and ask a question, or you can text us at 651-461-9226. Now here is the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor, Bruce Helmer. Hello, Bruce. How are you?
Hello, Susie Jones. I love that introduction. You can ask financial questions for the rest of your life if you want to. That's awesome. Well, I don't know if I'll be here that whole time, but somebody from Wealth Enhancement will answer your question.
Exactly, exactly. So Peg is off today, I understand?
Yeah, Peg is getting a well-deserved day off. And, you know, Susie, thank you for putting the number out there right away. I don't have a specific topic today. We refer to this as kind of an open line show where listeners can ask us anything.
Yep.
And then whenever I do a show like that, I always bring in a couple of questions that either we didn't get to in a previous week or came into wealthenhancement.com,
okay,
or if it's something I've been getting during the week from clients and prospects. And coincidentally, you can't even make this stuff up, three or four times in the last week, I had people independently of each other ask me about Wealth Enhancement doing educational events. They hadn't seen any educational events for a while. So just so happens, Peg's off today, but this week on Thursday, May the 9th, she's hosting a webinar entitled Women and Wealth. There's a couple of other Wealth Enhancement financial advisors, female financial advisors, and it's going to be financial planning, retirement planning, but it's all, again, pertaining to issues that are unique to women. And if, you know, again, people that know the show and know what a good speaker Peg is, it should be a really informative webinar. And if you're interested in that, you can go to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com and you can tune in. The webinar is Thursday, May the 9th, and it's at 3 p.m. Central Time. And then, Susie, I'm actually doing a bunch of educational events out and about in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area over the next couple of weeks. This particular event, we're really focusing on retirement income planning, making sure you don't run out of money before you run out of breath. It's really appropriate for anyone nearing retirement or already in retirement. And on Tuesday, May the 7th, I'll be in Bloomington. May 8th, I'll be in Woodbury. Thursday the 9th, I'll be in Roseville. Then on Tuesday, May the 14th, I'm in Eden Prairie. On the 15th, I'm in Plymouth. And then Thursday the 16th, I'm in Wayzata.
Wow.
So if you're interested in I know I've got a busy couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of client meetings on my calendar. But you know what? This is what I love to do. You're not going to hear me ever complain about being busy. So if you're interested in any, if we're coming to a geographic location near you in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metropolitan area, again, you can go to events.wealthenhancement.com/MSP. Again, that's events.wealthenhancement.com/MSP. If you want to find out more about the event or sign up to come, there's no cost, there's no obligation. We're not selling anything. It's purely educational, informative, and I love doing these events. And if people want to come out and see us again, they can go to events.wealthenhancement.com/MSP. I'll repeat that in the second half of the show.
All right.
Now, one of the things, Susie, one of the things I'm talking about at this educational event, and I'm going to lead with this question today, and again, we'll get listeners involved absolutely early. I just got a couple things I wanted to hit on. Peg and I think, talked about this in the last couple weeks, but I've seen articles again, and I've gotten questions from a lot of different clients and prospects about the 4% withdrawal rule. And for listeners that don't know what that means, a bunch of really smart people one time got together and they did thousands of what they call Monte Carlo simulations. What that means is basically they used a bunch of different sequence of returns. They did a scenario where when you first retire, the first year you retire, the stock market's way up and your return on investment is really high, and then it's low, and then it's high, and then it's medium. And then they did scenarios where it starts out bad, and they go through, you know, thousands of simulations, and they determine that based on historical sequence of returns and possible sequence of returns, the safe withdrawal rate to make sure that you don't run out of money before you die is only 4%. And I've never personally, as an advisor, bought into that. And I know a lot of really smart people did a lot of research and put a lot of time into it. And oftentimes I get the question, well, does that mean my return on investment is only going to be 4%? No, your average return on investment might be much higher than that. It might average 6, 7, 8%. But as the simulations demonstrate, based on the sequence of returns, for example, if you retired in 2008 and the first year that you were going to take money out of your retirement plan, the stock market was down over 50%. Now you're spending money when the market's way down, locking in losses, taking your account balance down even further after the retraction in the market. So you might come back and have an average return higher than 4, but if you're taking money out when your returns are less than 4 or negative, they concluded that the safe withdrawal rate is 4%. There's a lot of reasons I mentioned I don't think much of this 4% rule. Again, I don't claim to be the smartest person in the world. I know a lot of smart people did the research to determine this 4% rule, but I've always contended there's a lot of reasons I don't agree with that, and I'll talk about this at this educational event. But the biggest one is that these simulations all assume that your withdrawal rate is at the same rate that your money's invested. And what I mean by that is if half of your money is, let's say, is in the stock market and half of it is in cash, bonds, things other than stock, now you take a withdrawal that it's these Monte Carlo simulations assume the withdrawal is at the same percentages that you're invested. So that 50% of your withdrawal comes from selling stocks and 50% comes from bonds and cash and things that aren't stocks. And I've always scratched my head and said, but why would you do that? If the stock market's down and you've got money in cash or someplace where you can spend money and not have to sell stocks at an inopportune time, wouldn't you do that? You wouldn't just sell stocks if the market was down. And I have not forgotten, Susie, how many clients I had review meetings with in 2008 that came in that were frightened. Their what I call their long-term money had retracted because the stock market had retracted, and they were nervous, and they said, should I get out of the market? And I'm like, well, I'm not sure what you're worried about. I mean, I understand you have less money now than you used to, but it's in what we call your long-term bucket. And by definition, you agreed, you told me, you didn't have to spend that money in the short term. That's your long-term money. You weren't going to spend it anyway. So why are you so concerned that it's down right now? You don't have to spend it, and I don't want you to spend it. Don't sell stocks right now. Let's go use your short-term money or your mid-term money, things that aren't in the stock market. So this 4% withdrawal rule, which I'm seeing a lot of articles on again, and it's back in vogue and back in favor, I just don't accept it at all. I coach my clients that when you retire, I'm confident telling you that you can have a withdrawal rate that's higher than 4%. Now, how much higher is going to vary client by client. What investments do they have? What other resources of income do they have? Do they have a pension plan? How old are they when they retire? Because if you retire late in life, your money, you don't have to pay for retirement for as many years as if you retire early in life. So there's a lot of variables that come into it, but I think 100% of the time I can get my clients an income that's higher than 4% without them having to worry about running out of money before they run out of breath. So that's one that I've been getting a lot lately, and again, I'm going to talk about that at our educational events this week as well. I got a couple of other things, but if texts or questions are coming in yet, we can get listeners involved, Susie.
All right, 651-461-9226. You can call us or you can text us on that line. A texter wrote in early asking about being divorced after 25 years of marriage, and it was quite a complicated question, but essentially the question was, does a person have access to their ex-spouse's Social Security at some point in their retirement? So would I, being divorced now, be able to, even though I was divorced 25 years ago, do I still have access to my ex-spouse's Social Security or a portion of it?
Yep. That's a great question, and it's one that we get not infrequently. I've had it, you know, several times before. And the way it works, Susie and listeners, is as long as you were married for at least 10 years, you can be eligible for your ex-spouse's for part of their Social Security benefit. Now, you can't just tap into their benefit before they do and before they reach a certain age. So let's give a hypothetical. Let's say that person A was married for more than 10 years to person B, mm-hmm. and now person B wants to tap into person A's Social Security, but they're only 55 years old and they're not drawing Social Security yet. Well, you can't tap in before they do. But now let's assume person A is 65 and is starting to draw Social Security, and person A was the primary wage earner, person B was stay-at-home caregiver, they have no Social Security or it's a much smaller benefit. They can get 50% of person A's benefit. And it doesn't, that's the other thing that comes up a lot, it doesn't dilute from person A. They still get what they get. And for that matter, if person A was married multiple times to people for 10 years or more, there can be a person C that can get part of the Social Security and a person D. So the key variables are you have to have been married for 10 years and you can't start to draw on it before they do. Once they're age of being able to draw and they're drawing, you're eligible to get 50% of it, and it doesn't diminish or dilute anybody's benefit.
Wow, that's amazing. How many people actually use that? Is that a well-known thing, or do people don't use that?
It's not well-known, Susie. So I would say that when I've gotten that question over the years, I'm going to rephrase that. I'm going to say that more times than not, when I've encountered that in my planning process working with somebody, I've pointed that out to people that didn't know it. In the fact finding and getting to know each other, I found out that, oh, you were married before and you were married to this person more than 10 years. Did you know that? And they're like, no, I didn't know that, really. I send them to, you know, to the Social Security website and figure it out. So they're very grateful, and for a lot of people, that one thing alone might have been, you know, something that made our relationship together very beneficial to them before I even do anything else, just pointing that out to them. So I think most people don't know that, and when they find out and they can take advantage of it, you know, I really feel good that I've been value added to that person.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, the idea that it doesn't diminish the other person's amount that they get, that makes it less, you know, less of a potential for big, ugly fights. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Yep.
And we know some people together, Susie, I'm not going to mention names, that have been through this process, and they said to me, well, how much does that cut mine? And I said, it doesn't. It doesn't, you know, impact your benefit at all. And they were relieved because they thought if the ex-spouse got 50% of their benefit, that they were going to be diluted or diminished somehow. And that, you know, that just, it doesn't happen, but people are afraid of that. Now, the question, and thank you, Texter, for the question, it leads me, you know, kind of, I'm going to segue into one of the things I had on my list. One of the questions I get a lot is what happens at an introductory meeting with a wealth enhancement advisor. So the reason I want to talk about that is at an introductory meeting, there's no high pressure to sell anything. We're getting acquainted. We're getting to know each other. I always tell people, I understand that sharing personal financial data is a difficult decision to make, and I personally wouldn't share my data with somebody that I didn't feel comfortable with, dare I say, you know, trust. So the first introductory meeting is really establishing a relationship, establishing a rapport, hopefully, you know, creating some trust. And then ultimately, we need financial data to do our job. But it doesn't start with financial data. It starts with building the relationship. And then when or if you're comfortable, we're going to ask questions, we're going to get data, and we're going to find out things like that. Have you been married before? What's your marital status? Do you have children? Do you have grandchildren? Is legacy planning a high priority? So I give people every opportunity for them to ask questions about me and about wealth enhancement. How do we do things? What can you expect from us? A lot of times people have questions about me personally. They ask about my family, my kids, my interests outside of work. When am I going to retire? Am I going to be here, for them? All these things come up in the introductory meeting. And again, that meeting, there's always no cost. There's no obligation. If you don't have a favorable opinion, you can walk away, and it didn't cost you anything. So when I do my events, I always invite people to come and see us. And I always express the fact that I'm surprised that not everybody does, because there's no downside. You've got nothing to lose. I don't know why you wouldn't come in and just see what it's all about and see if you're interested. And if you want to walk away, you can walk away. But why not find out what maybe we can do for you? So introductory meetings, I get told all the time that people, it wasn't painful. They were nervous about it sometimes, but it turned out not anything to be nervous about. They always tell me they learned something, whether they engaged us or not, they learned something from the meeting and getting ready for the meeting. And more often than not, they tell me they had fun. And then the vast majority of the time, I'm blessed to admit, they do end up engaging our services and we work together. But even if you don't, it doesn't have to be a painful experience. I know we got. I didn't mean to hijack the show. I know we've got more questions.
Yeah, we do. And a follow-up question to the divorce question we just talked about. This person just wanted to know, can I take half of his at 62 and then wait and take my own at 67 or 70, letting it grow to a higher benefit?
Yeah, great question. So, and yes, that's a technical part of the whole thing. And one of the things, that Peg and I have talked about a lot over the years is how complex or complicated Social Security actually can be. And this is a good example. So, yes, let's go back to person A and person B. Person A turns 62. They're going to draw their benefit. Person B, who didn't work outside the home, or no, let's change it. Let's say person B does have their own Social Security, but at 62, they're going to take 50% of their ex-spouse's and let their own continue to accumulate, because your Social Security benefit from 62 until full retirement age, which for most listeners is probably 67 or something close to that, it can continue to grow, and then from 67 to 70, it grows about 8% a year. Before 67, it's about 6% a year. So, yes, you can take 50% of your ex-spouse's benefit, let your own benefit keep growing, and then flip and turn yours on if that number is higher than 50% of your ex-spouse's benefit. So, yes, maximizing the efficiency and getting the full benefit that you're entitled to from Social Security is something that a lot of people don't do. A lot of people leave money on the table because they don't know what their options are. So, again, thank you, Texter. That's a great follow-up question to the initial text.
All right, 651-461-9226. A texter writes, good morning, Bruce. My mom passed away in January, and my brothers and I have inherited the family farmland and have decided to liquidate it. Can you speak, I would assume generally, about what the tax burden might be on that kind of a transaction?
So first of all, condolences for your loss. And what you're going through is not just a hard thing emotionally for losing a loved one. It's a hard thing in my experience. So a lot of people that listen to the show know that I grew up in Olivia, Minnesota, in the heart of Renville County, in the heart of farmland. And I understand that oftentimes farm families, it's multiple generations. Farming is embedded in them, in their blood. And now to get out of farming, to liquidate, to sell land, that's a very emotionally difficult thing. From a taxation standpoint, yes, there's going to be tax consequences, and this is going to get way too complicated for me to give a real thorough answer on a radio show. But don't try to do this alone, I guess would be the main thing. Seek out guidance from either a financial advisor and or an attorney that's got some experience with agricultural ag law and or an accountant, because there is going to be tax consequences, but there's also potential things that you can do to mitigate some of those taxes. Don't just say, we're going to sell and pay all the taxes on all the gain without talking to some professionals and seeing if there's some things that you can do, because there might be. And sometimes there isn't much, but sometimes there is. But I would not make that decision alone in a vacuum. Take your time, get some professional guidance, see if there's some things you can do. But again, that's a tough thing to go through, loss of a loved one and then liquidating a family farm that might be multi-generational. You want to be as economically as efficient as you can, and you're going to pay some taxes, but there might be some things you can do to reduce those taxes. And my clock, Susie, tells me we're getting close to break time.
Yeah, we certainly are. We want to remind you, your money, it's your time to text or call us at 651-461-9226. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to call, 651-461-9226. Always, though, you can text that question as well, 651-461-9226. It is your money. Welcome to the second half of the big show. If you're listening, remember, if you have a question anytime, you can call this number, 1-888-6-ADVICE. And also, you can email questions at any time to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But for the next 25 minutes, you can call 651-461-9226, or you can use that same phone number to text us your questions. That is, again, 651-461-9226. Welcome back to the founder of the Wealth Enhancement Group, Bruce Helmer, and financial advisor. We have a lot of text questions, Bruce.
Hey, thank you, Susie Jones. Thank you, listeners, for hanging in there. I want to mention really quickly before we get back to questions, this coming week, Peg Webb, who's off today, is hosting a webinar Thursday, May the 9th at 3 p.m. Central Time. It's Women and Wealth. There's a couple of other female advisors that will be joining her, but Peg will be leading the discussion, talking specifically to women about building wealth, protecting wealth, being able to retire with ease. You can register at the same website Susie just gave you, yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. That's Peg's webinar this Thursday, May 9th, 3 p.m. Central Time. And then also other educational events, live dinner events. I'll be out and about in the Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota metropolitan area over the next couple of weeks. I'll be in Bloomington and Woodbury and Roseville, Eden Prairie, Plymouth, Wayzata. We're talking about retirement income planning, and you can find out more where I'll be, what time it starts, where the actual event is, and register if you visit events.wealthenhancement.com/MSP. You can find out exactly where I'll be and when, and register if you want to. Again, we invite people to come out. No cost, no obligation, not selling anything, just hopefully providing some good information. We love doing these educational events. You don't have to be a Wealth Enhancement Group client. You don't have to buy anything. We're not going to try to sell you anything. We're just going to try to give you some good information. So we've got those coming up as well. Well, Susie, let's take as many questions as we can.
All right, very good. 651-461-9226. This texter writes, how do you buy a 10-year bond? Just pretty simple.
Well, they're talking about treasuries, and there's a lot of places you can do that. You can do it through a financial advisor. We sell, bonds to clients, T-bills and T-bonds. You can do it at some banks. There's a lot of places you can go do that. But, you can't make this stuff up. I was just reviewing looking at my notes for a client meeting I have tomorrow, and I realized that this particular client became very conservative as they've gotten older, and I'd forgotten that like a year ago they'd moved out of a lot of their positions in the stock market, and we bought them like ladders of CDs and treasuries. So you can do that through financial advisory firms really easily. There's a lot of places you can go do that.
Okay.
Whether or not you should, if someone came to me and just said, hey, I want to do this, I can do that, but I'm going to ask them a lot of questions and try to find out more about their situation. And if I don't think it's a good idea, I will tell them that. And if I think it is a good idea, I'll say, I agree, it's a great idea. Let's do it. Here's how we do it. In the case of my client that did it a year ago, I totally agreed. I know their personality. I know what rate of return they need to have success. They don't need a lot of risk at this point. And in their case, it was the right thing to do. So, a lot of people can help you do that. It's not hard to find a place to buy treasuries.
Very good. This next texter writes, I work now and I have a 503 Roth option. Should someone themselves continue or stop rather contributing to the 503B and start contributing to a work 503 Roth? I'm 56 with 7 to 10 years left to work.
So when people give numbers like that, what they're really referring to is a plan. And that's the section of the tax code that references that kind of a plan. The most common one that I think people are familiar with is 401k, but it could be a 501 C3, it can be a 457. And essentially these plans have a lot of things in common. And traditionally, historically, they were tax deferred plans where the contribution to the plan was made on a pre-tax basis, so that the amount of the contribution would reduce your income in that tax year by the amount of the contribution, and then you didn't get any 1099s or pay any taxes on the gains till you withdrew the money. In recent years, companies have added a Roth option to these types of plans, meaning you don't get a deduction for the contribution. But if the money is allowed to stay there at least until age 59 and a half or for 5 years, whichever is longer, you can take tax-free withdrawals. So it's kind of, I'm paraphrasing the question a little bit. It kind of comes down to, am I better off doing a tax-deferred plan where I get a present-day tax deduction, or am I better off doing a Roth where I don't get a deduction but I don't pay any taxes at all if I use it right? And the answer for most people is to do some of both. Mm. Now, how much of both, again, that's where it gets tricky, and it's going to vary based on each individual situation. But in my experience, most people are overweighted, and this is something, again, I'm going to be talking about in the next couple of weeks at these educational events. Most people have only done or mostly done these traditional tax deferred plans. They've been stuffing money in a 401k. They either didn't have a Roth option, or they only got it recently, or they didn't know about Roth, but they've been participating in their company 401k for 15, 20, 25 years. And now they're sitting with a ton of money in this tax deferred plan. And that's great. I mean, I like these plans. I always encourage participation in the company plan. Think of all the advantages. Number one, it's easy. You don't have to do anything. Uh-huh. They just withhold the contribution from your paycheck. You don't have to write a check. You don't have to do anything. It just happens automatically. Number two, if it's the traditional plan and you get a deduction for the contribution, it lowers your taxes in that tax year. Number three, maybe there's a matching contribution from your employer. I always want people to participate at least to the extent that they get the matching contribution. And that matching contribution, by the way, could apply either to a pre-tax or tax-deferred plan or a Roth plan where there is no deduction. They might still match up to a certain extent your contribution. So I like these plans. I like people participating in these plans. But I don't like them to the extent that that's the only thing people do. Susie, I've seen people come in here more times than I can count where 90-95% of their net worth is in that company retirement plan. And the problem then is not the plan. Like I said, there's a lot of things I like about it, and I want them to do it. But if they come in there as an example, and I've seen this, again, more times than I can count, somebody will ultimately, when they get comfortable and we've talked and they feel good about sharing information, they'll show me their 401k statement. And let's say there's $1 million in it. And they'll talk you know, proudly, look, I've got $1 million. I worked here for 30 years. I worked hard. I funded this plan. I've accumulated $1 million. I'm ready to retire with $1 million. And everything they say during the meeting, I can tell that they think they've got $1 million. But they really don't, because that's not all their money. Uncle Sam's got a tax lien on that. When they start to spend it, Uncle Sam's going to hold his hand out and say, where's my part of that? So $1 million becomes $700,000 or $750,000, you know, whatever their tax rate is. You have to diminish that figure by the amount of taxes. So it's not really $1 million. And again, I'm not saying I don't like the plan or that I'm against the plan. I like the plan, but they need to understand that that's not all their money. So we talk a lot about tax diversification, meaning I've got some money in taxable accounts, some money in tax deferred accounts, and some money in accounts that are maybe completely tax exempt, like a Roth, where I avoid taxes completely. So that's what we work with clients on, trying to get that tax diversification. So the texter's original question, and again, I don't care if it's a 501c3, a 401k, if there's a Roth option, any traditional option, they probably want to participate in both. Now, how much in each one gets trickier and probably get some help determining how to maximize the efficiency. Should it be 50-50? Should it be 75-25? I don't know. That's going to vary for every person. But it's nice to have multiple options in your company retirement plan.
Bruce, when you have that 401k money, back to our million-dollar person, and your financial advisor says, let's move some of that 401k money into a Roth account, you can do that just once? Is that what you're allowed by the government, to roll over a 401k into a Roth? And do you have to pay on that? I mean, like you said, somebody's got to pay Uncle Sam.
Yeah. Susie, thank you for that question. I love it when you get involved, because the question you're asking, I guarantee you there's thousands of listeners with the same question out there, so thank you. So what you're referring to is a Roth conversion. So if I have a traditional 401k or a traditional IRA where my contributions were pre-tax, meaning I got a deduction for the contribution, now I've been deferring the tax, no 1099s, no taxes on the earnings, now I'm going to spend the money, I'm going to pay the taxes. So you say, well, wait, Bruce just told me I should have tax diversification, so I should get some into a Roth. Well, you can shift traditional 401k, traditional IRA, traditional tax deferred plans to a Roth, but there's a cost to do it. You're going to pay taxes on the amount that you convert. And when I tell some people that, they say, well, I don't want to do it then if I got to pay taxes anyway, but it might still make sense. It depends upon at what tax rate you're going to pay. So if I've got clients, and this happens a lot, while they're still working and they have high income and they're in a high tax bracket, I might not recommend doing a Roth conversion because the cost is too high. But if they're retired and now they're in a, say, a 10% or a 12% bracket, I might say, let's take money out of your IRA or your 401k. And again, oftentimes people go, well, no, I don't want to do that. I have to pay taxes on it, and I don't need the money for lifestyle this year. And I might say, let's take it out anyway, and let's soak up the low bracket that you're in right now, because you're probably never going to be in a lower bracket. Somebody's going to pay taxes on this money someday, either you or whoever you leave the money to. And if we can pay at 10 or 12% right now, let's do it. Let's take a withdrawal where we soak up the bracket. You don't need the money. Pay the tax and shift it into a Roth where no future tax is due. So if you want to spend that money tax-free in the future, you can. Or if it's a legacy asset that goes to loved ones, then they don't have a tax lien on it. So to the first part of your question, Susie, does it have to be a one-time thing? Most of the time, it's not. Most of the time, when I work with clients doing Roth conversions, if they did too much in 1 year, that's going to create too much income and throw them into a higher bracket. It might throw them from a 12 to a 22 or a 24. So I might say, let's just take small withdrawals every year for the next couple of years, and let's do these conversions a little bit at a time at 12 cents on the dollar for the next 5 or 10 years rather than take it all out at once. So it can be a one-time thing. It can be an every year thing. There is no restriction. And there's no restriction on how much money you make. As a lot of our listeners know, to be able to contribute to a plan for the first time to make a contribution on Roth, there's income limits. If you make too much money, Uncle Sam won't let you contribute to a Roth. But to convert from a traditional IRA or 401k to a Roth, there is no income restriction. You can make $10 million a year and do a conversion if you want to. I probably wouldn't recommend it if your income's that high because the taxes are going to be high. But there's no age restriction. There's no income restriction. Anyone can convert. That converting is different than new contribution. Anyone can convert money from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA. Whether or not it makes sense, again, for most people, is a little too complicated to figure out on your own. You're going to want to talk, again, to a financial advisor, someone like me, or your accountant, or both, but you're not limited to just one time. In fact, very rarely do I just do that one time. It's usually over the course of many years.
Is it kind of designed to lessen the blow a little bit of taxes so you're not all in one big bucket paying it off at the time at one time?
Absolutely. That's exactly why we do it. So again, a lot of people, and thank you for taking us down this, Susie, because this is important. And again, this is the type of thing I talk about at educational events. So prevailing wisdom, I think, tells people, look, these tax-deferred plans that you have, you shouldn't spend them till the government forces you to spend them. For most people now, required minimum distribution, the mandate to start to take withdrawals from these tax-deferred plans, for most people, it's going to be age 73. So a lot of people say, look, if I don't need the money for my traditional IRA or my traditional 401k, I'm not going to take withdrawals because it increases my taxes. I got to pay taxes on it. But as we always talk about with regard to tax planning, we're trying to minimize taxes over a lifetime, not just the current tax year. And sometimes you're better off paying a little bit of tax in the current tax year because it'll save you a lot down the road. So a lot of people that say, no, I'm not going to touch my IRA till I have required minimum distribution. So then you get there, and based on all of your sources of income, including now a large required minimum distribution, because you've got a big IRA, now that throws you into a 22 or 24% tax bracket or higher. And I'm like, we could have been taking out a little bit every year for a lot of years at 12%, and we missed that opportunity. So, yes, by spreading it out, we're paying taxes sooner than we might otherwise have to, but over the course of our lifetime, we're paying less in taxes.
Wow, that's a lot of good information. 651-461-9226. If you have a question for Bruce Helmer, Wealth Enhancement, this person just asked this question 2 minutes ago. I'm currently working, and I'm under the age of 55. Can I convert a Roth 401k while still working? Is there a penalty for that if you're under 55?
So again, good question.
Yeah.
When people think about taking money out of a retirement plan, they're thinking of the age of, 59 and a half.
Right.
If I take a withdrawal before 59 and a half, I not only have taxes, but I have a 10% penalty. So the answer is at 55, there's nothing legally preventing them from doing it, but my guess is if we looked at it, we would encourage you not to because the cost would be too high to do that conversion, probably. And it reminds me, Susie, on the show over the years, I've always talked about how we always do this Roth conversion analysis for our clients. And I had a client come in one time during the week after I had talked about it the previous weekend, and he said, hey, I heard you say on your radio show you always do the Roth conversion analysis. You never did one for me. And I said, who said we didn't do one for you? He goes, well, you've never said anything to me about it. And I said, that's because I don't recommend you do it. We did the analysis, and it doesn't make sense for you, so I didn't bring it up. I'm not going to bring up something that I'm not going to recommend that you do. So we always look at it, and for most people, while they're still working, it probably does not make sense. Most of the conversions that we do are past the age of 59 and a half, and most of the time the client is retired. Not 100%, but the vast majority of the time when we do these conversions, they're older and they're retired and they're in a lower bracket and they don't have to worry about premature distributions and any of that junk. It just works a lot better when you're a little bit older.
All right, 651-461-9226. I want to say we've got a lot of questions about being divorced and getting their hands on some Social Security of their ex-spouse. But one person wrote, referring to the ex-spouse Social Security, can you still claim the former spouse's Social Security if you have remarried?
So, now I've got to think this through.
Okay.
So I think that's a great question.
All right.
I think you're eligible, again, going back to person A and person B.
Right.
Person A was the primary wage earner. Person B was the stay-at-home caregiver, doesn't have a lot of Social Security or doesn't have any. They can take 50% of person A's benefit if they were married for 10 years or more, but if they remarry, they forfeit that right. And again, it's another one of these goofy laws that I think sometimes the tax laws are set up such that they actually encourage people to not marry or even get divorced sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think that's sad that people, you know, again, it might be smart financial planning, but the romantic in me doesn't like the idea of not getting married or breaking up a marriage for financial reasons.
I would think so.
I know.
Yeah. Well, there are a couple more. I mean, but I'll get to this one just off the top of your head. If someone is a stay-at-home mom, do they still, or stay-at-home parent, do they still have access to their partners? And they never married. That's the question. And we have about a minute. If a person's go ahead.
So again, marriage is the key here, and marriage for 10 years. If you were never married, if you were just, significant others didn't marry, you're not eligible for anything. Or if you were married for 9 years, but you didn't make it to 10, you're not eligible for anything. So the key from the Social Security Administration is legally married for 10 years or more, that's the criteria. Now, whether that's fair or unfair, I'm not passing judgment. That's the way it works. That's
okay.
The way it is.
Wonderful. You know what? We have so many more questions. So what I'm going to tell everybody listening right now is to call 1-866. I just had the number right in front of my face. Come on. Well, you can email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Oh, here it is. 1-888-6-ADVICE. Bruce, I should know that. I've said it so many times over the weeks. Also, yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Make it a great weekend, Bruce. Good to talk to you, and we'll talk to you next Sunday.
You do the same, listeners. Everybody have a great day.
Thank you.